The headlines: a Palestinian is shot dead in the occupied West Bank after allegedly killing and injuring several Israelis in a stabbing attack. Iran urges the Iraqi government to prevent threats against its territory originating in the Kurdistan region. Plus, Russia rules out Ukraine having any intentions to hold peace talks to end the war. Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank over a stabbing attack. The regime's military killed the Palestinian near the Israeli settlement of Ariel. The Palestinian man earlier reportedly stabbed several Israelis, killing three and wounding three others. Hamas resistance group has praised the operation and says the move shows Palestinians' power in their fight against the Israeli crimes and in defense of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinians launched a stabbing attack in response to the ever-increasing Israeli violence in the occupied territories. It has killed 140 people so far this year. We were earlier joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Muna Kendall, for the latest on the deadly incident.
Israeli soldiers attacking Palestinians on a daily basis. Israeli forces raiding Palestinian areas, cities, refugee camps, and on a daily basis arresting people from all walks of life, including elderly and women. Israeli soldiers are always quick to use to pull the trigger, let's say. But what happened today, according to the Israeli military, a Palestinian man arrived at a gas station and industrial park of the illegal settlement of Ariel, northern the occupied West Bank, and he stabbed Israeli settlers. This is what the Israelis are saying. He succeeded to flee. Israeli forces chased him and shoot him and killed him. 2022 witnessed the highest number of casualties, the highest number of Palestinians that had been killed by the Israeli soldiers. The Israelis don't want for the Palestinians to resist the Israeli soldiers, to defend their lands, to defend their homes. They want them to remain silent.
Iran says Iraq's federal government has a responsibility to prevent any threats coming from the Arab country's northern Kurdistan region. The Iranian foreign minister says Tehran and Baghdad enjoy excellent relations, and so Tehran does not expect to be threatened from the Iraqi Kurdistan region. Hossein Amir Abdullahian added that the security of the two neighbors can be guaranteed if they abide by the outcome of bilateral talks. He made the remarks in a phone call with the Iraqi foreign minister. For his part, Fuad Hussein gave assurances that Baghdad would not allow any threats to come to its neighbors from its soil. Earlier, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps carried out fresh drone and missile strikes against the terrorist bases in Iraq's Kurdistan. The forces say that the strikes are in response to the terrorist operations against Iran. The European Union has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran over its response to the recent riots in the country. An EU statement said 29 individuals and three organizations have been targeted over what it called Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. Interior Minister Ahmad Vahidi, as well as several military and police officials, are on the sanctions list. Press TV is one of the three entities blacklisted. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Iran has strongly criticized the sanctions. It called the EU move unfounded, illegal, and meddlesome.
Iran insists that recent riots in the country were orchestrated by outside adversaries such as the United States. But EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels on Monday took a different view. They have agreed on new sanctions against Iran, claiming the rioters are seeking freedom.
To support them, today the Council adopted another 31 listing under the Iran human rights regime.
The channel you are watching now, Press TV, has also been added to the EU sanctions list. Press TV management has vehemently rejected claims by the EU that the channel broadcast forced confessions from detainees during recent riots in Iran. EU officials have been asked to provide evidence to back up the claims, but it's already clear that will not be forthcoming, simply because it never happened. This latest set of sanctions follows similar measures against Iran taken by the EU in October.
Iran is geographically a very strong position because they can decide, OK, if the European Union is going to make life harder in terms of sanctions, we can close or threaten to close the Strait of Hormuz. That means that Qatar, which is the principal supplier, I think about 70% of gas is coming from Qatar these days, will be stranded.
One EU minister says the new sanctions should not be allowed to derail talks around the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal.
I hope that this can be kept separated because the JCPOA negotiations, of course, it has a long history already, and I would say it's this close that we could get an agreement on JCPOA.
During a debate on human rights in the European Parliament a few days ago, the EU was accused of displaying double standards.
Europe has invaded and butchered millions, plundered and committed genocide, overthrown and murdered revolutionaries, backed brutal dictators, imposed murderous sanctions.
Amid growing economic turmoil in the EU, many experts claim sanctions against Russia have backfired. In other words, sanctions don't work. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Iranian Vice President Ali Salah Jaegeh has addressed the UN climate summit in Egypt's resort city of Sharm el-Sheikh. He spoke about the sanctions against Iran, calling them economic terrorism. The Iranian official said measures pose a threat to sustainable development and hamper efforts to improve air quality in his country. Let's take a listen.
Economic terrorism as an emerging phenomenon and resorting to it as an instrument of pressure constitute an emerging threat to sustainable development. The unjustifiable worsening measures that have been imposed upon my country have targeted the wealth and welfare of my citizens. Amongst others, such measures have seriously restricted access to transfer of financial resources, new technologies, and essential means required to take effective national steps in mitigation and adaptation as well as to improve on air quality. Additionally, unilateral and illegal sanctions stand in blatant contravention of global sustainable development agenda and the relevant multilateral agreements and have ramifications that stretch from beyond our national territory. In the face of such unlawful pressure, Iran, owing to the strive and perseverance of its young scientists, has managed to take important steps, thereby streaming development into a sustainable path to development.
A draft declaration shows most members of the group of 20 major economies are considering to blame the Ukraine war for aggravating global economic woes. The document is yet to be adopted by the leaders of the G20 during their summit in the Indonesian capital, Bali. The draft resolution reportedly says security issues pose a threat to the global economy. That is a reference to the war in Ukraine and its economic repercussions. The Bali summit is the first G20 leaders have taken part in since the breakout of the war in late February. In an address to the event, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called for an end to what he calls Russia's destructive war.
I'm convinced now is the time when the Russian destructive war must and can be stopped.
Zelensky also accused Russia of weaponizing energy ahead of winter and destabilizing energy markets around the world. He said this should be countered by imposing a ceiling on Russian energy prices. Ukrainian president also ruled out a third Minsk agreement aimed at ending the war in the eastern Donbass region. Zelensky claimed that there will be an immediate violation by Russia after the agreement is reached. Moscow has rejected his comments. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says they show Ukraine's unwillingness to hold peace talks with Russia. The EU top diplomat hails the bloc's military assistance to Ukraine in its war with Russia, while claiming that Moscow has failed in its military efforts after a meeting of EU foreign ministers. Joseph Borrell said the bloc would continue to isolate Russia globally by imposing sanctions in order to cripple the Russian economy. He also claimed that Russian President Vladimir Putin is unable to defeat the Ukrainian army and is withdrawing his troop from the compensating for what Borrell called a military failure. The EU foreign policy chief also accused Putin of deliberately increasing human suffering in Ukraine. Borrell further gave some figures of the European Union's aid to Ukraine since the start of the war in February.
And I think I can say that at least 8 billion on military equipment have already been provided to Ukraine by the European Union and the member states. It's about 45% of the effort done by the US. So it's not negligible. We are talking about not 3.1, but about 8 billion on military support.
Canada has also announced that it is doubling its military aid to Ukraine to $1 billion Canadian dollars. The funds go towards military surveillance, communications equipment, fuel, and medical supplies. Canada has also sanctioned Russian justice and security officials, accusing them of human rights violations against opposition leaders. In response, Russia has added 100 Canadians to its sanctions list. New figures show the UK's unemployment rate increased in the third quarter as the country grapples with sky-high inflation and a wider economic crisis. According to official data, 3.6% of the workforce is now out of jobs. That is a rise of a tenth of a percent on the second quarter. The UK inflation now stands at more than 10%, which is the highest level in four decades. Surging prices have prompted strikes across the country. The industrial action have cost the UK's economy over 500,000 working days only in August and September. Meanwhile, energy bills and food prices are expected to continue rising as more people lose their jobs. Hundreds of medical workers take to the streets in Argentina's capital, Buenos Aires, to protest against low salaries and poor working conditions.
I feel sad. The truth is that they take away our vocation because we can no longer work like this and live like this with an undignified job. We have a great vocation. We do it non-stop for the patients. We love public health, but people have to know because they will always go to the hospital. No matter what coverage they have, they will always need the hospital.
Doctors and nurses held candles and carried banners that read, "Healthcare doesn't switch off." The protest comes almost 3 weeks after health workers began a push for an increase in their minimum wage, among other demands. A freeze in wages and rampant inflation have put pressure on staff in the 30 public hospitals in Buenos Aires. Inflation is forecast to log a 100% surge this year in Argentina. In Australia, hundreds of people have been rescued after flash floods hit several towns in the country's southeast. Rescuers have used helicopters to save the people trapped on their roofs in the worst-hit towns in the state of New South Wales. The residents scrambled to their rooftops to flee the floods caused by heavy downpours in recent days. The water has inundated houses, highways, bridges, and farms, and isolated many towns. Despite the halt in raining, emergency crews are warning that danger is yet to pass. Over the past year, Australia's east coast has been repeatedly struck with severe floods driven by La Niña phenomenon, which brings heavy rains. In a recent resolution, the UN General Assembly refused to recognize the Taliban interim government while discussing the situation in Afghanistan. However, as our correspondent reports, not recognizing the Taliban could adversely affect the nation.
A resolution was recently presented to the UN General Assembly for the first time after the Taliban took over Afghanistan. While discussing issues including security, terrorism, and the social and economic situation, the Assembly significantly refrained to recognize the Taliban as a government. Experts believe this could affect the nation.
Non-recognition of the Taliban by the global community could negatively affect Afghanistan. It would bring illegitimacy to the Taliban government. It would also have consequences for the country's diplomatic relations, trade, and culture. There may even be more sanctions. These could have adverse effects on people, especially the poor.
In response to this resolution, Suhail Shaheen, the head of the political office of the Islamic Emirate in Qatar, said according to Islamic principles and values, the Taliban are committed to fulfilling all the legitimate rights and demands of the people, and that they are trying to provide the right means and environment to achieve this goal. Experts say the recognition of the Taliban could have positive results.
If the Taliban government is recognized after the observation of human rights and some other standards by the Taliban, it could have very good results for the nation, such as in the fields of international relations and international economic interactions.
Since the Taliban took control 15 months ago, their non-recognition, along with the sanctions imposed on the central bank and the freezing of Afghan assets, has driven the economy of the country to the brink of collapse. It is believed the recognition of Taliban may be a way to improve the situation in the country. But on the other hand, releasing assets and removing sanctions could also be effective. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Yemen's Ansar La resistance movement slammed the Saudi-led coalition for failing to renew the United Nations brokered ceasefire deal amid deteriorating humanitarian crisis in the impoverished Arab country. The movement said the coalition of aggression is responsible for the failures to extend the truce deal and worsening humanitarian conditions. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Yemen's Al Masira News Network reports that the leader of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement demanded an end to the Saudi-led war on his country, calling on the Yemeni nation to continue to resist the Saudi aggression, which has been supported by the United States of America and the Israeli regime. In a recent speech to mark the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, Abdul Malik al-Houthi urged the war coalition to stop the aggression, to lift the siege on Yemen, and to end the occupation of the country. He also called on our dear people to continue confronting the aggression as long as it continues. Elsewhere in his remarks, Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the United States and the Israeli regime, as well as their acolytes, seek to enslave nations. He said the United States and Israel have directed all their endeavors towards bringing people out of light and into darkness. Tens of thousands of Yemenis flocked recently to the squares in the capital, Sana'a, and other cities to celebrate the Holy Prophet of Islam's birthday anniversary. The participants urged Muslims across the world to stand against Western imperialism. They held banners against the United States and Israel, which have supported the Saudi-led military aggression against their country. The rallies came just a few days after a United Nations brokered truce arrangement between the Ansarullah movement and the coalition came to an end. The truce first came into effect on 2nd of April for an initial two-month period and was extended twice until 2nd of October. Saudi Arabia and its allies, most notably the United Arab Emirates, have been waging a war against Yemen since March of 2015, trying in vain to reinstall the exiled regime of Abdurrahba Mansour Hadi. The military campaign, which has been enjoying unstinting arms, logistical and political support from the United States, has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and turned the entire country into the scene of the world's worst humanitarian disaster. In recent months, Yemeni officials have issued stern warnings to the Israeli regime about its role in supporting the Saudi war in Yemen. In a warning to the Saudi-led coalition and the countries supporting it, Yemen's defense minister said recently that the country's armed forces are capable of hitting targets far beyond Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Yemen's defense minister, Major General Mohammed al-Atifi, said, "We will never hesitate to bombard very sensitive and important facilities, and we will include them in the list of our future targets." Fast News Agency explains more about the same story. Yemen's Ansarullah Popular Resistance Movement said a Saudi-led coalition, which has been attacking the country since 2015, is entirely responsible for the failure of a United Nations brokered truce arrangement between Sana'a and the aggressors. Spokesman Mohammed Abdel Salam made the remarks in a tweet on Thursday, 13th of October, saying the ceasefire ended and was not extended due to the aggressor country's disregard for humanitarian demands and natural rights of the Yemeni people. The United Nations-mediated truce arrangement expired on 2nd of October amid the invading coalition's constant violations of the agreement and its refusal to properly lift the siege that it has been enforcing against Yemen simultaneously with the war. Mohammed Abdel Salam also named some of the obstacles that the coalition has been throwing in the way of truce's extension. He said the coalition had refused to reopen the Sana'a International Airport and Yemen's lifeline, Al-Hudaydah, the port of Al-Hudaydah, and denied that the government in Sana'a access to the country's oil and gas wealth so it can pay the Yemeni people's salaries. The spokesman noted, peace in Yemen is not possible unless the invading countries abandon their arrogant mentality. Meanwhile, the Yemeni foreign minister said there will be no talks about extension of the United Nations brokered truce arrangement until the nation's legitimate demands are fully met, stressing that the Sana'a-based National Salvation Government will make every effort to establish just and dignified peace throughout the war-torn country. Hisham Sharaf made the remark at a meeting with the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs and Deputy Emergency Relief Coordinator in the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Joyce Misuya. The meeting took place in Sana'a, the Yemeni capital, recently. The Yemeni Foreign Minister, Hisham Sharaf, emphasized that the only solution to offset the adverse consequences of the ongoing humanitarian disaster in Yemen is to immediately stop the Saudi-led aggression, to lift the sanctions against Yemen, and end any kind of foreign military presence on Yemeni soil. Al Mayadeen television network covers the same story from a different angle. A senior member of Yemen's popular Ansar Allah resistance movement warned the country's armed forces will target oil facilities deep inside Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates in case the Yemeni people's rights are not fulfilled. Recently, Muhammad al-Bukhaiti, a member of Ansar Allah's political bureau, said Yemeni people have their rightful demands. He warned that Yemen's army has the ability to target Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates oil installations if those demands are not met. Moreover, a spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Brigadier General Yahya Sari, also warned that foreign companies with operations in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates to immediately leave those two countries. In a post on his Twitter account, spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Brigadier General Sari, renewed the warning for foreign firms stationed in the two aggressive countries. He said they should move their operations to other countries, to other less risky countries, in order to prevent further losses. Earlier, Brigadier General Sari had noted the warning will stay in place as long as the US-Saudi-led aggressive aggression countries are not committed to a truce deal, and give the Yemeni people the right to exploit their oil wealth in favour of the salary of the Yemeni state employees. He also asked the United Nations to step up its humanitarian programmes in Yemen to provide the crisis-hit country with more food and more medical supplies, as well as financial aid.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood in Nahjul Balagha. And we are currently focusing on the first and second sermons. Here Imam Ali alayhi salam explains some of the circumstances in which the messengers and prophets came to guide mankind. And we discussed previously that, you know, you can see this similarity in this day and age today. What we are discussing right now is that part in the second sermon and in the first sermon where Imam Ali alayhi salam says that human beings were in a state of confusion, and we see that confusion still there. So the confusion is also there in the world of today, and we say that the way out is to stick to the teachings of the prophets, because those are the ones that clearly understand the needs of mankind and how to make use of the resources that exist in the world in a way that a person can come out of this state of confusion and save himself from destruction. Now, when we are discussing about this, one of the issues that the societies also faced was not only spiritual problems, but also physical problems, material problems like lack of security, lack of, food. And these were some things that the communities that time really faced. For example, we see in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, فَلْيَعْبُدُوا أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ فَلْيَعْبُدُوا رَبَّ هَذَا الْبَيْتِ الَّذِي أَطْعَمَهُمْ مِنْ جُوعٍ وَآمَنَهُمْ مِنْ خَوْفٍ. That worship the Lord of this house, of this sanctuary, the one who fed you from and saved you from hunger, and he protected you from insecurity and fear. So we notice these things were there at the time of the prophets and messengers, and the messengers came and solved this need of the people.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, coming back to our discussion, the most important difficulty and problem at that time, apart from those physical and material issues, was the issue of misguidance and the wrong direction that human beings were taking. And the problem with this was that human beings didn't have a proper, they didn't have a proper aim in life. They didn't have some, long-term aims. They didn't have something to look forward to. It was just all about living their life in a way that they just satisfy those quick needs of the society. If you look at the world of today, the people of the world of today, if you ask them, why are you working or why are you earning? They will tell you that, we are earning so that we can get food, so that we can enjoy our lives. And you ask them, why do you want to, for example, enjoy your life? And why do you want to eat food? And why do you want to do all of these things? They'll say, so that, I have the strength, I have the ability to go to work again and to struggle and to do nice things and maybe to do this and that, to work and struggle and all that. And then once you work and struggle, what happens? You get money. And when you get money, what do? You invest more in your business. So you notice that the people of this world today, it's all about, solving some of the material issues that they have and just, dwell in this material realm without having anything beyond that to look forward to. It's just like a person, he goes to the petrol pump And you ask him why. He says, I want to fill it with fuel so that I can go to the next petrol pump. All right? And when you go to the next petrol pump, you ask him, why do you want to go? Or where do you want to go after that? He says, I want to get the fuel so that I can go to the next petrol pump. And that's the way he continues to reply and say. So he's been moving, but moving in no direction, basically. And all that movement and all that struggling and all that working and going here and there doesn't have any purpose, because the purpose is the mere action themselves, beyond looking forward to anything higher.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, the times of the Imams, the time of the Prophets, when the Prophets came to the societies, the societies were in that state. The societies didn't have something lofty to look up to. They didn't have anything. They didn't have those proper dreams. You know, they say you need to have a dream. They didn't have that. Their dream was just material issues. And what are those material issues? I mean, how can that be the purpose? Like, when you achieve that, what do you want? I want other material issues. So you see, there is nothing more than that. And this is the problem that humanity is facing today, that they don't have anything beyond. But a Muslim, a Shia, even a believer in God, even a Muslim, whether Shia or Sunni, they have something to look forward to. They have something high, something lofty. They know that there is a God. They know that there is perfection to achieve. If they don't look for those lofty things, at least they know that we need to fight against oppression. We need to bring about justice in the society. You know, there are some things they look forward to. And they look forward to because of a divine reason. Because if you ask other people, they say, we want justice so that we can just live in this world in the material sense. Then what? After, you know, feeding yourself materially, what are you looking for? Where are you going? Now, when a revolution or when a society has got that software, that ideology, that can make them dream for something much more beyond some mere material issues, that is when that society will progress at a very fast rate, and their progress will be guaranteed. It will not be that that progress will one day go down. As long as that state of looking for something beyond, of struggling for something higher than this material world is there in the people, those communities, those societies will progress and go further. And this is something that we noticed that at the time of the Imam Ali alayhi salam was also there. And Imam Ali alayhi salam alludes to these things in different parts of Nahjul Balagha. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
مرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
While the U.S. regime baselessly accuses other countries of vote rigging, this regime itself has the most undemocratic and unhealthy election in the world. The U.S. has lost face, and American officials cannot hide this issue from the eyes of the world by simply putting a makeup on the face of their politics in their Zionist-controlled media. In this regard, we have provided different media views on this issue. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Kahan International wrote, "The U.S. media is trying to distract attention from Washington's international terrorism by giving most of its space to the farcical midterm elections for the Senate and the House of Representatives, whose results will not end American crimes against humanity. The voters in the U.S. were being taken for a ride by the false promises of the candidates to control the growing inflation and curtail the ever-increasing murder of the innocents, mostly of the black-skinned, by either the white policemen or deranged gunmen that suddenly storm schools, marketplaces, and parks to slaughter for fun children, shoppers, and recreationists." The Zionist-controlled U.S. media, however, never details the crimes of the ruling regimes. Whether Democrat or Republic, on a far greater scale around the world, with fatalities and casualties numbering millions, including in Syria, Iraq, Ukraine, Yemen, and Afghanistan, being the glaring examples of the suffering of entire nations at the hands of the American terrorists. Thus, for the free world, including the Islamic Republic of Iran, the elections in the U.S. and their results do not matter at all in view of the fact that Republicans and Democrats are two sides of the same coin. Republicans and Democrats are led by the filthy rich rogues, rascals, rowdies, and ruffians who thrive on the chicanery of the corporates to feed on the 99% deprived while distorting reality through the Wall Street Mafia, which churns out fake news of happenings in American society as well as all over the world. A prime example in this regard is the subservience of Washington to Tel Aviv and the whitewashing of Zionist crimes in order to project the oppressed people of Palestinians as terrorists. Another example is the depiction of China as a threat to world economy and of North Korea as a permanent nuclear nuisance. The NATO war in Ukraine is yet another case of the devilish deception of the U.S. regime to vilify Russia. Then there is the character assassination of President Bashar al-Assad, while it is the U.S. whose sadistic policy through its terrorist proxies has killed almost 500,000 people of Syria and displaced 5 million others as the illegally stationed Yankee troops continue to steal Syrian oil and wantonly target civilian centers. The same theft of millions of barrels of oil by the U.S. goes on in Iraq and Yemen, which the Americans and their clients have destabilized without the least bother for the half-starved and disease-stricken people of those lands who continue to heroically resist. Meanwhile, the oil-producing unrepresentative clannish regimes are being held in thrall by the U.S. and the Israeli regime to ensure a dirt-cheap supply of crude for the capitalists. Afghanistan has been left in tatters with no hopes of recovery anytime soon Oil-rich Libya pushed into a civil war, Egypt placed under a military dictatorship, and the people of Lebanon are being chalked to a slow and painful death by the U.S., whose satanic nature is now fully evident in its stepping up of its 43 years of hostility against the Islamic Republic by openly backing Fox terrorists and traitors, while supplying them with weapons in vain hope of destabilizing Iran. The U.S. voters have no real information of these crimes against humanity of both the Democrats and Republicans, who are history's most evil terrorists that deserve to be decimated. If the American people really want justice and equity in society and become masters of their own destiny, thus, whether the elephant seizes the donkey in its trunk and throws it out, or whether the donkey gives a nasty kick on the elephant's rump to drive it out, is not our concern, and we wish that the two of them will kill each other. Meanwhile, Truth Out wrote fossil fuel firms spent millions in bid to defeat Democrats in midterms. Ohio voters chose Trump-backed Republican J.D. Vance over Democrat Tim Ryan to fill a crucial Senate seat, and the race was a nail-biter until the end, seeking support from working-class voters in the state that former President Donald Trump won twice. Ryan ran a heterodox campaign with little support from the National Democratic Party, but the race was so competitive that Republican groups swooped in and spent at least $30 million to counter the congressman and boost Vance. A good chunk of that money was a gift from the fossil fuel industry. Ryan, a fierce critic of the trade deals that gutted manufacturing jobs across Appalachia and the Rust Belt, made it clear that he is no enemy of fossil fuels. Ryan wants Ohio to be a leading producer of clean energy technology, but he is also a big fan of fracking for natural gas, which provides jobs for his constituents and income for a region that saw coal mining and manufacturing collapse in recent decades. Ryan has backed away from supporting anything like a Green New Deal and is compared to Senator Joe Manchin, the conservative Democrat and coal champion from West Virginia, who obstructed President Joe Biden's agenda in an attempt to win concessions for the fossil fuel industry. While Republicans attack Ryan for voting against unpopular bill that would have deregulated polluters and opened sensitive ecosystems such as the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling, the fossil fuel lobby is more concerned about which party controls the Senate and how much Democrats can achieve before Biden leaves office. The industry spent lavishly on the 2022 midterms in hopes of flipping Congress over the GOP control and thwarting any effort by Democrats to fight climate change by reducing oil and gas pollution. As of October 19th, fossil fuel industry groups and companies such as Koch Industries and Chevron had donated $32.8 million to two super PACs aligned with Republican congressional leadership, according to a review of federal records by Sludge co-founder David Moore. The super PACs, the Congressional Leadership Fund and the Senate Leadership Fund, have spent more money on the 2022 midterms than any other outside groups. Fueled by wealthy industries and billionaires, campaign spending by outside groups reached a record $1.3 billion by mid-October, and total spending could be higher after largely unregulated super PACs spend the final weeks ahead of the election flooding the airwaves and internet with ads. The Senate Leadership Fund, which operates independently but is dedicated to winning Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a GOP majority, was the top spender as of last month after reporting nearly $150 million in expenditures, according to Open Secrets. National campaigns are not the only target flush with cash from record profits. The fossil fuel industry poured money into lobbying and campaigns at all levels of government in 2022, including in states such as New York and California, where policymakers are pursuing cleaner energy and regulations to reduce the health impacts of pollution. The expensive efforts by the fossil fuel industry and its conservative allies to sway the midterm elections came as world leaders had gathered at the latest United Nations Climate Summit in Egypt. The World Meteorological Organization kicked off the summit recently by announcing that the past 8 years were on track to be the warmest 8 years on record due to ever-rising greenhouse gas emissions that trap the heat in the atmosphere. Extreme heat waves, drought, and devastating flooding affected millions of people and cost billions of dollars in 2022 alone, according to the UN Weather Agency's new report.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith which has been narrated from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This hadith is about the reward of walking to the mosque. In this hadith, the Prophet said, he who walks to a mosque intending to join the congregation gets the equivalent of 70,000 good deeds for every step he takes. And he is raised at as many levels. And if he dies on the way, Allah assigns 70,000 angels to him to visit him in his grave, to keep him company in his loneliness, and to seek forgiveness for him until the day he is raised again. You know, a lot of people, you know, live close to the mosque, right? And, you know, so walking to the mosque is not a problem for them. But, you know, a lot of people, especially people who live in, you know, Western countries where, you know, cities are big and there's not a lot of mosques, you know, traveling to the mosque usually is done by car, right? So this hadith, you know, it's very challenging for such a person, right? For him to, you know, walk, you know, all the way to the mosque probably might take a whole day, right? So, you know, if this person, he actually could maybe once in his life or once in a while walk to the mosque, you know, imagine the reward that such a person would get for it, you know, because the Prophet said in this hadith that every step that this person takes is equivalent of 70,000 good deeds, right? You know, so this person would obviously have a, you know, a lot of reward for it. This is actually a hadith that kind of encourages us to build mosques close to our home, right? So that we can, you know, get the reward of walking to the mosque, you know, because it's so close to us. Right? It could also be an illusion for that. You know, walking to the mosque, sitting in the mosque, even looking in the mosque, all of these things are things that, you know, have reward and, you know, have sawab in the akhirat. For example, we have another hadith regarding the reward for actually just sitting in the mosque. The Prophet said the following to Abu Dhar, one of his companions. He says, O Abu Dhar, verily, for as long as you remain seated in the mosque, Allah Most High will grant you an extra level in paradise for every breath that you take. The angels send salutations on you, and 10 good deeds are recorded, and 10 evil deeds wiped out for every breath that you take therein. You don't have to say any zikr or recite any prayer. You're just sitting in the mosque, and you're breathing for every breath that you take, you know, you're getting reward. Just like we have similar hadiths about Ramadan. In Ramadan, when we're fasting, you know, the breaths that we take are counted as acts of ibadat and worship, and we get reward for them. Similarly, it's about the mosque. You know, the mosque, you know, we're sitting in there, we're just breathing. These breaths that we take are actually acts of ibadat and worship, and we're getting reward for them. Just like the steps that we take for the mosque. We usually think of, you know, we're going to the mosque to get reward, to do ibadat. But actually, the act of walking there is itself an act of ibadat and worship. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the reward for walking to the mosque in the words of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi wa sallam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.